This is Radharani's place, Radhakund. It looks like, I remember sometimes in the last 10 or 12 years, we were giving class in Gopal Mandir. Sometimes we would come down from the rooftop where our room was for class, and we'd be about seven ladies and no men, and I'd say, I'm very sorry, I can't sit here and give class. Yeah, there's so
you go to your nitya room and you can give class.
Okay. Please give me your blessings that can come very soon. So we're continuing with the discussion of the second verse of Shikshastakam, the very insightful illumination of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And today we're discussing the line, Etadrishi Tava Kripa Bhagavan. Because Lord Chaitanya is praying to Bhagavan in this verse, Nam Nam Akari Bahuda Nija Sarva Shaktis. Hey Bhagavan, hey Krishna, you have put all of your potencies in your holy name, and you made it easy to chant. There is Niyamata Smanane Nakala. There is no hard and fast rules about chanting. You can chant while eating, sleeping, walking, anytime, even in the storeroom or out in the latrine, which is even Lord Chaitanya cited that example himself. His own life is the example of Niyamata, no Yama, Niyama, without Yama, without rules and regulations. When he was in Puri, he was holding his tongue to keep from chanting because he considered that while at the latrine, the chanting of the holy name would be contaminated. And the boy named Gopal, he had spoke to Lord Chaitanya saying, actually, we can die at any time. So we should always chant the holy name, because the holy name is completely pure and never becomes contaminated by any atmospheric condition. And Lord Chaitanya appreciated his wise instruction and gave him the name Gopal Guru. He's only a boy. You have a Gopal too, I think, don't you? No. Well, you have a Guru, but not a Gopal. Guru Prasad. She has one child. Very, very smart boy also. Guru Prasad. Just like our Bhaktivinoda, he named his son Bimala Prasad, because Bimala Devi is one of the Shaktis of Jagannath presiding in Puri. So this phrase, Etadrishi Tava Kripa Bhagavan, it means, Etadrishi means so much. You, Tava, you have given so much mercy, Bhagavan. And this, in the next phrase, Durdevam, we'll discuss that, but I'm so misfortunate. So there's one description, one explanation. This Durdevam, or offensive nature, is actually cured by the mercy of Bhagavan, Bhagavan Kripa, which comes to us as Sri Guru. Bhaktivinoda Thakur cites one verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter 2, verse 37, which he's explaining that this point, that it is the mercy of Bhagavan that all these wonderful things, that this all-potent holy name is being given to us. We, who are so durdevam, which we'll discuss next, so unfortunate and so offensive and so ignorant and so lazy in regards to this unlimited mercy coming in the all-powerful names of the Lord. But the Lord himself rectifies our durdevam nature by sending us Guru. So our durdevam nature is cured by the mercy of Krishna, which appears as Guru. And to explain that point, Bhaktivinoda Thakur cites this verse from Bhagavatam. Vayam dvitiya vinivesita syad ishad apetasya vipariyo smriti tanmaya yato buddha apajitam bhagyaika yesham guru deva tatma guru devat devat atma. This is a key word. The Guru is the Deva of our Atma. The Guru is the Lord of our soul. The Jiva, who is averse or opposed to Bhagavan, forgets his own constitutional nature because of his association with Maya. Due to this forgetfulness, he becomes absorbed in the conception that he is the material body. And thus he thinks, I am a demigod, I am a human being, etc. In this state of bodily identification, he fears old age, disease, and so forth. Therefore, those who know the truth should consider their own guru as Ishvara, the Supreme. In other words, they should see him as their master, who is none different from Bhagavan, and who is very dear to Bhagavan. Through exclusive devotion, they should perform one-pointed worship of that Ishvara, their guru. That's the last line of the verse, 11th canto. Bhakti yaika yesham gurudeva tatma. Eka. Aikya, Eka Bhakti, Aikantiki Bhakti to Guru. Bhaktivinoda Thakur cites a Bengali verse to explain the same point. Krishna Chari Jiva Kaila Anyabinivesh Taitara Viparya Smriti Araklesh Sadguru Ashraya Kari Krishna Kripa Ash Ananya Bhajana Kare Jaya Krishna Pash. And its translation is here. The living entity abandons Krishna, Krishna Chari, and becomes absorbed in other things, Anya Bininivesh. As a result, his memory is perverted or turned upside down, Viparyaya. Viparya Smriti, and he suffers Araklesh. By taking shelter of the spiritual master, Sadguru Ashraya, he begins to hope for Krishna's mercy, Krishna Kripa Ash. That's interesting presentation Bhaktivinoda Thakur is giving us here, that we take shelter of Sadguru, and Sadguru fills the darkness of our heart with the light of hope. By his instructions, by his love, by his kindness, by his engaging us in Krishna's service. So this is the Krishna Kripash. We have great hope. Guru creates great hope in the heart of the disciple that the mercy of Krishna, who he is in fact an installment or representative of, but that the full mercy of Krishna will soon be coming. Sadguru Ashraya Kari Krishna Kripa Ash Ananya Bhajana Kari Jaya Krishna Pash. By taking shelter of the spiritual master, he begins to hope for Krishna's mercy, and he takes up single-minded devotion to Krishna, which leads him to Krishna. Ananya Bhajan. So that's why Guru is so necessary, because Guru is like a shepherd. Sheep have a tendency to follow the sheep in front of them, the leader sheep. But sometimes they also wander here and there. They wander, the leader is going this way and the sheep are going left and right. And so then the shepherd takes his stick and he goes, hey, come on, get back in line, follow the leader. So we may have some sukriti or piety from previous life and some interest in spiritual pursuits, and think we can do it on our own or make progress on our own without Guru. And we can to some extent. But the progress we can make without Guru is simply the progress on the path of Sukriti, or the progress on the path of accumulating good fortune. And when we have accumulated enough good fortune by our own endeavors in bhakti, or let's say attempts at bhakti, then the Krishna, being pleased with our attempts, will cash in our good fortune, like green stamps or something. You know, you collect at the supermarket, you collect so many stamps, and then you get a free pot or something, pressure cooker or something like that. They had these stamps. So Sukriti is like that. When on our own, we can do so much: hearing, chanting, reading, puja, everything. But all that will lead us to Guru, Sadguru Ashraya, Kari, Krishna Kripa Ash. Because oftentimes people that don't have Guru and they're practicing or attempting to practice bhakti, they often fall into a hopeless situation. Even they say that, I feel hopeless. I've lost all hope. But Guru is that great sun of hope. He is that sunshine of hope. So if that sun, once the sun is in the sky, then anything that's not supposed to be there will soon go away. Clouds or fog or anything covering the sky will be eliminated by the powerful rays of the sun. So any bad qualities like hopelessness will be removed by the sunshine of Guru Kripa. That's our friend Kakbu Shandias confirming this. Radhe Radhe. Actually, you can read if you go to Hindi Panchang, and they have omens, and they have all these little side points there in Hindi, and they describe if a crow lands on the north wall, it means one thing. If he lands on the east wall, it means another thing. And it's very interesting to know these things. At certain times, if they speak, it means one thing. It's not, it may, to the untrained eye or to the uneducated, everything seems erratic or chaotic. No, but I mean, just not the point we're discussing, but someone will say, well, a crow landed on your fence and chirped and ran away. You know, in other words, they don't see any synergy in everything, how this crow and we are all related. And you know, there's a hand behind everything. There's a controller behind everything. And especially certain living entities, according to the Vedic viewpoint, they're, maybe you can close the gate, all these kids are wandering inside. They've actually realized, the great sages, how particularly different entities are harbingers of events, especially the crow. The crow, there's many, many things written about the crow. Even in Ramlila, we hear about the crow. The crow, the dog, especially these two, the crow and the dog, are very important creatures. So, yeah.
And the dog, if he's howling and all, it means that somebody is some bad omen or something.
Yeah, it's like this. Yeah.
Even the child, when he cannot speak, and the small child cannot speak, they feed the crow and he gives the remnant and starts to speak.
Acha. So they give the child's remnants to the crow, and then they take back the remnants from the crow and give it to the child.
Because if the child doesn't speak, the mother parents worry why he cannot speak. So then they say, because crow means too much crowing. He gives voice, so he
gives. You learn all these things if you grow up in India, because half the things, they seem like superstition or tradition, or my grandmother told me and my great-grandmother told her. Well, if you trace it all back, it all comes back to Veda. Basically, it all originates from Veda. Yeah, for Saturn. Yeah, Shani. And dog, I mean, Saturn's carrier is a dog. The Viman of Shani is a dog, so people have dog problems. The dogs are always barking them and chasing and trying to bite them. Because not everybody has that problem. That means your Shani, your Saturn planet is not in good shape. So you should carry a bunch of glucose biscuits in your pocket, and maybe you can offer them to Guru or somebody. I don't know if Krishna eats. And then when the dogs come in your neighborhood, wherever you do bhajan, then you can start feeding them, and they'll be happy, and then Shani will be happy. And like this.
Dogs can also be a seven if people die. They help you to.
Yeah, well, that's part of Shraddha. That's part of Shraddha and Pinda, that you feed the crow, the cow, or the dog. Even yearly on the Shraddha, you feed anyone. You offer prasad to Bhagavan, and you take a little bit and you put it on the side and let the crow or the dog eat it. And they are the conveyors, just like if you say, well, how I press my mic, I press my telephone, and then the waves go over to France, and I talk to my girlfriend. And you can have some rough idea of satellite and microwaves, and you have some, you try to explain it. It's kind of magical. So it's also a magical, karmic microwaves that you put food in his belly, and it goes to Yamapuri, and then it gets transferred in Yamapuri to your relatives that may be in hell. And this is told in Veda. So it seems very odd and strange, but it's all there. It's rather fun when you learn all these things and you actually apply them. It adds a lot of variety to your... Yeah, cow, dog, and crow, these three. Usually the cow is the preferred recipient of bhoga. Anyway, let's get back to the point here. It's endless. I mean, the Vedas are endless, and our curiosity is also endless. The purport by Srila Narayana Maharaj. When the jivas are averse to Bhagavan, they become absorbed in Maya and thus become materially conditioned. Maya Devi, through her two functions of Avaran Atmika and Vikshet Atmika, throwing and covering potency, makes the living entities wander in the prison-like material existence, suffering its torment by thinking they are the experiencers of happiness and distress. A person who is resolute, or you can say fixed or determined, takes shelter of the lotus feet of a bona fide guru and is thus able to cross over this material existence. By accepting the guidance of a guru who has realized Bhagavan, and by being absorbed in the intimate service, Vishrambha Seva, to him, by being absorbed in intimate service to the guru, one attains the mercy of Bhagavan, and material identification goes far away. One will attain, and by doing this, one will attain knowledge of one's sarup, Bhagavan's sarup, and the sarup of the illusory energy, by understanding the spiritual master to be near and dear like one's own soul, and by serving him. By the Guru's mercy, the living entity will ultimately be engaged in the eternal in eternal service in Bhagavan's abode. So, Guru is forever. This is a fact. Guru is forever. Forever means eternal, nitya. Because we'll have Guru here and we'll have Guru there. We're serving Guru here and we'll serve Guru there. So it's, no one can say, no husband and wife can say that. They maybe sing romance songs or love songs. Oh, our love will never end and our love will never die and things like this. But the fact is something different. But the Bhagavatam is saying, Bhat yai kate sham guru deva, devatatma, guru deva atma. Devata Atma, the Guru is the Lord of my Atma, the Guru is the Lord of my soul, the Lord of my mind. So, that's, it's very difficult to, and of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he makes a little more qualification here in his Bengali version of this. 11th Canto Bhagavatam is only telling Guru Devata Atma. He's saying Sadguru Ashraya. He's saying not just Guru, but Sadguru. And Sadguru, because many times and many lifetimes we get different varieties of Guru. There's Kula Guru, there's Vipra, there's so many types of Guru that teach a variety of Vedic sciences. And they can be considered the Atma, or the Lord of one's soul, but they may not be the Sadguru. There's different definitions of Sadguru. The basic definition is that Sadguru is one who connects you with Sat, the eternal. He connects you with Krishna, with God. and his service. So he's Sadguru, because he's Guru. He's heavy with knowledge, and he's removing the darkness of ignorance and linking you with the Supreme Absolute Truth. So he's Sadguru by Diksha. Another definition of Sadguru is that Shiksha Guru, or that Diksha Guru, who reveals your eternal identity, your Sarup. That's also another meaning. Sometimes people take one meaning and exclude the other meanings. They say, oh, your guru is not Sadguru. He hasn't given you Manjri Sarup, Diksha, so he's not Sadguru. But this is not the full definition of the word, the term Sadguru. Because many gurus, they're not actually leading people to the eternal. They're engaging people in the temporary. So life after life, we may be fortunate to get Sadguru, and we're progressing towards the eternal reality. Then finally, in one life, we attain Sadguru, who reveals our Sarup, our spiritual form, and engages us in the Nitya, Seva of Radha and Krishna. Because oftentimes, the question is asked about Guru, that we'll say, life after life, Janme Janme Prabhu say, that you are my Prabhu, life after life, that the Guru, that we get initiated by one Guru. How is it life after life? Because sometimes a Guru, he goes into Nitya Leela, he doesn't come back. So generally Acharyas say it's Krishna, because Krishna is manifesting as Guru from the heart. And he comes, the soul has a contract with Krishna, and Krishna appears life after life as Guru and carries us. Gauravinda Maharaj was saying, he says that the Guru, he was explaining his idea, is that the Sadguru, he teaches his disciples, and if he goes into Nitya Leela, that same Guru from there, from the spiritual world, he's guiding and blessing the disciples by arranging for them to get different gurus, one after the other. This is his explanation. Other acharyas have different viewpoint. Because it doesn't, in one sense, we should, because sometimes you may think, well, I want to give everything to you, but maybe you're not going to be my eternal guru, and so, that it should never be like that. Part of a guru shishya, tattva, is that the disciple, because sometimes the question is asked, even to the most advanced, I've heard this question asked to some of the most advanced spiritual masters on this planet, and they say, well, what if your guru is really not that advanced, and people even, and you kind of have the idea that he isn't that advanced. How should you see your guru? And then this acharya said, disciple should see his guru as uttam. He should not take out a yardstick and start measuring or weighing his guru. This is very dangerous. Very, very dangerous. He should see, and this is not someone from ISKCON either. This is someone who really knows the tattva and really knows what he's talking about. He said, disciple should see Guru as uttam. He is a topmost devotee. Krishna has sent Guru to me to fill me with faith and to attach me to the Lord and engage me in His service and to bring happiness and peace in my life and to bring me to the spiritual world. So he is uttam. It's not like, well, maybe, oh, he's not that advanced. This is very, very bad. Very, very bad thinking. It is very, very bad. We should deposit our full faith at the lotus feet of our guru, because Krishna has come before us in any number of manifestations as guru. So from our side, we pour our full faith and full surrender there, even to the extent of Vipralamba Seva, which we described, how intimate and confidential and heart-giving that type of seva is to guru, which is enjoined in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Rupa Goswami. This, in fact, is the criterion for the Sat Shishya, that he should have Vipralamba, the mood of Vipralamba Seva. And whatever may happen, which sometimes some difficulties happen in that relationship, but all of our surrender and all of our service and all of our love and all of our intimacy and all of our confidence and trust being offered to Guru is actually being offered to Krishna. Krishna is receiving it. This is speaking about our guru, Now it's
from Govinda Swami Maharaj, I heard this my having a there is teacher and cheater. So what do you do?
Yeah, that. But I'm talking about that right now. Actually, I'm saying that one. This is from another acharya is telling that this should be the mood of the disciple. Now, if in fact, due to his misfortune, that the disciple did not have enough sukriti, so the guru has gone here, there, whatever. You're saying teacher and cheater because it's different spelling, this changing the letters. But the point is that guru is actually representing Krishna. So that everything we're offering to that manifestation of Krishna is actually going to Krishna, and Krishna is receiving it all. So if that guru deviates, or if he because he's not actually on the topmost liberated platform, if he has he fails in somehow in some way, or he gets deviated, there's no loss for the disciple. Because this type of consistent approach has to be there. Otherwise, even from the very beginning, the disciple it doesn't really make any progress because he's not submitting himself to the guru disciple relationship, because there's certain elements that have to be there with the disciple and the guru. So the guru is acting as guru, trying his best, but due to prarabdha, due to difficulty, he may leave that post. But if the disciple said from the beginning, said, "Oh, he's like this, so I won't surrender, and I won't serve, and I won't give," because then there's no progress there, because if one is posted as guru, one is representing, at least in say in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, with all sincerity and all trying his best, although he may be Madhyam Kanishta. And Sadguru, by one definition of Sadguru, is one who's liberated. One who's on the Uttam platform. He's on Bhava. So he's only, but he can function, even, it's told, one can function as Guru on the level of Madhyam Kanishta, which means he's only Nishta. He's Nishta. So he can go down. But because he's representing the absolute truth, he's a Sadguru of that, and he should be approached that way and thought of as an Uttam from the disciples' viewpoint. Because somehow Krishna, I had this much purchasing power of Sukriti, and Krishna came to me in this manifestation to accept what I have to offer. Now, if I offer everything to this guru, and somehow the guru goes astray, because I've given everything, Krishna is accepting everything. It's going to Krishna's heart. Then he'll say, "Oh, you were so sincere in your approach, because you followed all the vidhis and rules of Shastra, and you did everything on your side, but there was some lack of sukriti, so this was your guru. Now you'll get this guru." And you often see that someone may have a guru at one level, then next, within a few years, a few months, they get the topmost guru. And how is that arrangement? The arrangement's done by Krishna, because he's very pleased with the approach. So this is the point I want to make, because sometimes people may say, "Oh, I have this guru, but this is very, very dangerous."
But the point was that
we get
cheaters because they have too much material desire. So okay, Krishna should take this is good for you.
Oh, the disciples had a cheating that different viewpoint. So can we go on, or because we get Guru Tattva, you can get lost forever. Shiva Tattva and Guru Tattva go on forever. So, because ultimately Guru Tattva is Krishna, so this is the important thing. If we offend any guru, we are offending Krishna. So this is very dangerous waters to travel in. That's one point we should keep in mind. So now the next word in this verse is Durdevam. And there's quite a few verses Bhaktivinoda Thakur uses to describe this term, which seems to be following what we've been discussing. Durdevam means misfortunate or unfortunate. Because in the prayer, Lord Chaitanya is saying, "Oh, holy name, you have all your potent, Krishna, you've invested all your potencies in a holy name, and it's easy to chant, and there's no hard and fast rules. So everything on your side, everything's wonderful and positive and encouraging. But on my side, you're like this, but on my side, Durdevam, I'm unfortunate, and there's so many reasons why I am unfortunate. And the main thing, and of all the misfortune that I have in my side, the worst thing is I have no attachment. I have no attachment, even despite hearing these seven treasures that are available in your holy name, and hearing how easy it is to chant your holy name, and it's the easiest process, and it can be performed anywhere by anyone at any time in any condition. After it's all said and done, I have no attachment. Nanaraga. So the word Durdevam indicates offenses to the holy name, Namaparad. Despite hearing and chanting the holy name, the jiva does not attain attachment towards the holy name on account of offenses. The word Durdevam refers to the jiva's aversion towards service of the Lord due to his having many desires to satisfy his mind and body. So Durdevam means offenses or aversion to serving the Lord. In spite of so much misfortune, however, the mercy of Bhagavan is always present. There is a way to get free from Namaparad. We should always remember that offenses are like a thunderbolt crashing on our heads. We should avoid aparads by continuously chanting so that there will be little opportunity to commit offenses. By chanting Namabhas, one obtains liberation or freedom from attachment to material sense gratification. Thereafter, the jiva attains qualification to chant the holy name purely, Shudanam. When one rises to the level of Namabhas or Shudanam, it is understood that he has done so by receiving Bhagavan Kripa. In other words, our Durdevam quality, our misfortune, and our tendency to commit offenses will be removed by serving Guru. That is the mercy, that is the Bhagavan Kripa. It comes in the form of Guru. And when one chants and is under the guidance of Guru, with the blessings of Guru, then he will receive the Bhagavan Kripa. And he will no more be Durdevam, and he will come to the platform chanting Namabhas and Shudanam. Excuse me. Our misfortune, another definition of Durdevam. Our misfortune, Durdevam, is that we have no taste for chanting Hare Krishna. And we have no power on our own to overcome or become free from offenses. This can only be done through the mercy of the devotees, Krishna's devotees, and by the power of the name. So that's why this particular shloka, Nanamakari Bahada Nicha Sarva Shaktis, Bhaktivinoda Thakura, he says that this number two shloka represents Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, and Anarta Nivritti. So the Bhajana Kriya, of course, is the practice of Nam Bhajan. But it's very important to do Nam Bhajan as much as possible in the association of devotees, because then the process of Anarta Nivritti goes much, much faster. Because we hear from them, we hear their chanting, and we hear about chanting from them, and in this way we get so much additional mercy, Bhagavan Kripa, in order to come to the offenseless stage of chanting and ultimately to the pure stage of chanting. There's a very nice prayer by Srila Sridhar Swami in relation to this point. It's almost sounds like he's paraphrasing a verse, but it's more like a prayer in relation to feeling oneself very fallen or very Durdevam. when such a wonderful process as non-bhajan is available, he said, "O Krishna, you are so infinitely gracious that you have given us the service of your holy name, Nambhajan. Still, my misfortune is the worst. I don't find any earnest desire within me to take the name." So this is relation to Durdeva. He's saying, "I am really unfortunate. I don't, within myself," and how many of us can relate to this? All of us. Taste, ruchi, namruchi, it's not some, generally it's not something someone is born with. Just one verse which we read in the course of our classes from Veda says that one can be automatically attracted to the holy name of the Lord or have namruchi if he has been chanting the holy name for 100 previous births. So it's not an easy thing. Let me turn that light off. I think the electricity has come. So he's saying, I don't find any earnest desire within me to take the name. I have no faith, no love, and no tendency to take the name. Sound familiar? I have no faith, no love, and no tendency to take the name. I do not find any innate hankering to chant the name. What can I do? This is a very beautiful, heart-rending statement by Srila Sridhar Swami, who is indicating something of our approach to this Durdevam. Because all of these prayers, of course, are intended for meditation and cultivation of our practice of the Nam. So each word is important for us practically. I mean, that's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is intending here. His intention is, this is our bhajan, the Shikshastakam. Once Bhaktisanta Saraswati was asked, he said, do you give Siddha Pranali? And he said, yes, we give Siddha Pranali. It's been given by Lord Chaitanya. And he said, what is that Siddha Pranali? He said, Trinadapi Sunichena Turaiva Sehishina Amanina Amanidena Kirtaniya Sadahari. So he's citing the utmost humility. And in order to be Siddha, one must be full of prema. And in order to attain Krishna prema, one must be in the absolute position of humility. Humility and prema go hand in hand. The greater one's love of God, the greater one's humility. And the greater one's humility, the more he attracts the mercy of Krishna. So, ultimately, humility is one of the most important qualities to attain, or to have, in order to progress in bhakti. So the entirety, not only Trinadapi Sunichena, but the entirety of the Shikshastakam, are all part of the process of bhajan and the krama, or the bhajan, the step-by-step process to attain perfection. So therefore every shloka and every word of every shloka is important for us to reflect upon and to enter deeply to. And just this one word, Durdevam, as our Sridhar Swami expanded a small prayer, we can also have our own individual small prayer in relation to this. Maybe echoing many of the same ideas he was saying, but we can, oh yes, Krishna, all power is there, but like once we were writing something in our chanting book, I'm saying, Krishna, we had called it the 5 A's of chanting. One was attraction. And I was saying that, Krishna, you're so attractive, and everything about you is attractive. And the power of attraction is within me. I'm attracted to so many things, so many people, and so many objects. And you're the all-attractive and most attractive person. But yet, why is there no attraction in me for your holy name? Like this. So, in our own way, we can formulate heartfelt prayers to Nam Prabhu based on these different concepts given by Lord Chaitanya. And this way, we'll be deepening our appreciation of Shikshastakam and improving our quality of chanting the holy name. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he cites one verse in relation to this. in text 5, or actually several verses, I believe. This text 5. Oh. I think that I already said that one. Let me just see. Because we already cited. Oh, this is text 3. Text 5. Yes, this is text 5, where Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he is describing this point of Durdevam, unfortunate. He says this is the signs of misfortune, or the characteristics of misfortune, or Durdevam, are described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 9, Verse 7. Daivenate hatadiyo bhavata prasangat sava shubha pashamanat vimukendriyaye kurvanti kama sukalesha lavaya dina lobhavibhuta manaso kushalani shashvat. Those persons who refrain from the hearing and chanting of your glories, which destroys all misfortune, and instead always engage in inauspicious activities, being obsessed with the desire for a particle of material sense enjoyment, are certainly wretched, for fate has stolen away their intelligence. And then there's some commentary here. Glorifying, Brahma is speaking this prayer. Lord Brahma is glorifying Bhagavan by saying those persons who are averse or opposed to hearing the narrations about Bhagavan and Bhakti, and who continuously perform inauspicious activities, being engrossed in worthless sense gratification, are unfortunate and bereft of intelligence. Prahlad Maharaj also says, a jiva who is attached to his home because of his undisciplined senses enters the deepest of hells. That's a famous verse from 7th Canto. Prabhupada quotes all the time. I don't remember the number, but Matir Nakushne Parato Satova. What's it I wrote? Mito Bipadyate Grihapratanam Adanta Gobir Vishitanta Mishram Punak Punak Charvata Charvananam. I think we've all heard this so many times. Punak Punak Charvata Charvananam Matir Nakushne Parato Satova. Either by the instructions of others or by their own realization or understanding or even the good advice of others, people that are addicted to sense gratification, they can't hear. If someone says, oh, stop this is not good, this life you're living is very sinful and abominable, you'll have dire and disastrous results in the future, even in this life you'll suffer so many diseases and anxieties, what to speak in next life, why don't you live a pure life, septic life, spiritual life. They can't hear. Even despite receiving good instructions. Adanta gobhir vishitanta mishram. Adanta gobhir, their senses are not controlled. So where do they go? To mishram, they go to hell. And what do they do day by day? Punak punak charvata charvananam. Krishna said, or Prahlad Maharaj is telling, which Prabhupada often said, they engage in chewing the chewed. They're doing the same. Their father did it. This is material life he lived, their grandfather lived, their great-grandfather, and I am doing the same thing. So Prahlad Maharaj is saying, the intelligence of one who again and again chews the happiness and distress that has already been chewed can never become pure. One who is absorbed in karmakanda by following the honey-filled statements prescribed in the Vedas will be bound by the long rope of the Vedas. The only means for the lustful living entities to become liberated is to immerse themselves in the dust of the lotus feet of a great Nishkinchan Paramahamsa Vaishnava. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's verse is also there. Tomara prasanga sarva ashubha karaye karva dodeva pravave moraman kamasukalesha ashe loba Akushalayase se prasange ne kaivabhyatan. Translation, to hear or speak about you O Lord, destroys all inauspiciousness. I am so unfortunate, however, my mind lusts only after fleeting sense pleasure, for which it works very hard. Consequently, my mind makes no effort to hear and chant about you. This is the unfortunate position of the mind. Our Param Guru gave us good instructions about the mind. Right? And when we go to, we're here at Radhakund, we're very fortunate because we're here at Radhakund. We can go to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's Bhajan Kutir, which was, originally established by his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I don't know, I haven't been there in a while, but years ago, when I first went there in 77, they had the original shoes and water pot and a stick that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati used when he was here. And I haven't been there to see if they're the same ones, because usually things get changed around here and there. But in 77, hardly anyone really took notice of that place or went there. And they were the original walking stick. And so Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, when we wake up, we should beat our mind with a stick 100 times. Crack our mind. And before taking rest, we should beat our mind with shoes 100 times. Because our mind is so crazy. In the night, so many tamasic vibrations will come in our mind. So we should beat them with shoes. And when we wake up, there's so many tamasic vibrations come in our mind, like, oh, I'm so tired, and oh, I'm sick, and I don't want to get up, and it's too early, and it's too cold, or it's too hot, or whatever it is. In winter, it's too cold to get out of bed. In the summer, it's too hot, or whatever. So then you have, by your bedside, you have to have one stick. And you just crack your mind, though. So, mind is, of course, the best friend or the worst enemy. A mind absorbed in Astakali Leela will be the best of friends. Bhaktivinoda Thakur continues to discuss the term Durdevam over several verses because it's such an important point. And text 6, 7, 8, 9, all the way through 12, he discusses Durdevam, which is a significant number of verses because it's our position. We're very unfortunate. And this was written 100 years, how many years ago was this? 1902, it was written over 100 years ago. And people now are much more unfortunate than they were then. So this verse he cites is, I can't really see it from so far away. This is from Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, chapter 7, verse 4 through 6. Bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihite male pashyat purusham purnam mayam cha tarapashriyam yas samohito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam paropi manyate nartam tatkritam chavipadyate narto pashamam sakshat bhakti yogam adhokshate lokasya janato vidvamsh chakre satvata samhitam. Prabhupada often quotes this verse, last one. Translation. With a pure heart, Sri Krishna Dvaipayana Vedavyas became absorbed in meditation through the process of Bhakti Yoga. He thus saw the Supreme Person, Sri Krishna, along with his external energy, which was far away from him, but under his control. Due to this Maya, the conditioned living entity forgets his service to Krishna and becomes affected by anartas. Although transcendental to the three modes of material nature, the living entity who is bewildered by Maya considers himself a material product. He thus identifies himself with his body and considers that which is related to it to be his. The infinitesimal living entity can only be delivered by Krishna Bhakti Yoga. But the mass of people in the material world are ignorant of this fact. Understanding this, Sri Vyasadeva manifested Bhagavatam through Bhakti Yoga. And Prabhupada He gives a translation of this verse also. Rather, this is in Prabhupada's commentary, a small piece I've extracted from Prabhupada's commentary. Revival of the dormant affection or love of Godhead does not depend on the mechanical system of hearing and chanting. These type of statements, I read one before, and these are the type of statements that say, wait a minute, what does it say here? Let me go back and read that again and again and again and again. Revival of the dormant affection or love of Godhead does not depend on the mechanical system of hearing and chanting, but it solely and wholly, which means completely and absolutely, it solely and wholly depends on the causeless mercy of the Lord. When the Lord is fully satisfied with the sincere efforts of the devotee, he may endow him with his loving transcendental service. So as we hear, it's everything is mercy, mercy. Kripa karo, kripa karo. Right? And we're doing all this mechanical hearing and chanting to somehow or other qualify for that mercy. In other words, we can say, alright, then let's stop our mechanical hearing and chanting. And then wait for the mercy, because the prophet says it doesn't depend on mechanical hearing. Attaining Krishna prema doesn't depend on mechanical hearing and chanting. Okay, well that's great to hear. That's great. I don't have to read it anymore. I don't have to chant anymore. It doesn't depend on it. But if you don't hear and chant, there's no question of getting any mercy. I mean, sometimes Krishna gives mercy. That's also there. But we have to follow Guru, and Guru will... everything is mercy. Guru's mercy, by mercy of Krishna, we get Guru. And then Guru says, oh, please do some mechanical hearing and chanting. So that by following Guru's order to do mechanical hearing and chanting, then we get the mercy of Guru. When we get the mercy of Guru, then we get the mercy of Krishna. Yasya prasadad, Bhagavat prasadad, yasya prasadad, nagati katopi. Vishnath is telling us. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he writes a very nice Bengali version of this Bhagavatam verse. Krishna Krishna Maya Jiva Etina Tattva Maya Mohe Maya Bara Jivara Anarta. Chitkana Jivara Krishna Bhakti Yoga Bale Anarta Vannashta Maya Krishna Prema Pale. Hey, Tatvaname Samadite Pale Vyas Bhagavate Bhakti Yoga Kalele Prakash. Vyasadeva saw three tattvas, Krishna tattva, Krishna's Maya tattva, and Jiva tattva, as well as a Jiva bound by Maya and bewildered by Maya, Maya Mohe, Maya Bada, and how the spiritual particle can rid himself of this Maya by the strength of devotion to Krishna and attain the ultimate goal of love for Krishna. Vyasadeva understood this tattva when in Nam Samadhi trance, Nam Samadhi, the trance of being absorbed in the holy name, then Vyas revealed the path of Bhakti Yoga in the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's explanation. It's very nice. It says, A tattva nam samadite paila vyas. This tattva, this truth, it's spoken, nam samadhi paila vyas, that he had taken, performed, bhagavate bhakti yoga kaila prakash. Then he revealed the path of bhakti yoga in the Bhagavatam. It's a very long purport. I'll read one section of it. The Acharyas write that the living entities who are controlled by Maya are absorbed in the three modes, devoured by the great disease of material existence, and unable to taste the sweetness of Bhagavan. The liberation of the living entities bound by Maya is possible only when Maya's coverings are removed. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains, to cure a sick patient, an expert doctor prescribes medicine and good diet. The remedial measure for the conditioned living entities is the process of bhakti. The medicine is hearing Hari Katha and chanting Hari Nam, and the diet is association of devotees and avoid offenses. So there's two medicines and two diets, right? This is the Vishnu's telling that if we want to get cured of the material disease and realize our eternal relationship with Radha and Krishna, we have to take two medicines and two foods, two diets. Food means, diet means food. The medicine is hearing Hari Katha and chanting Hari Nam. That's the medicine. And the diet, or the food, the staples to eat, is to stay in a sadhu sangha and to avoid offenses, associate with devotees and avoid offenses. This is his idea. A very good recommendation. By hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, living entities can become free from their anarthas and ignorance, and thus obtain Krishna prema. Sri Krishna's transcendental pastimes with the Braja Devis, which are prema-filled, are described in Bhagavatam. By hearing these narrations with faith, the living entities can again become established in their eternal dharma. So, this next verse, text 7, Bhaktivinoda also talks about this Duradevam principle. Is there any questions at this point? I think we're just discussing different Bhagavatam verses, basically. So in these five verses now, 7 through 12, these are a little more technical. And actually many of these things are coming from Harinam Chintamani and also in Madhurya Kandamini. But 7 through 12 in Bhajan Rahasyam, Bhaktivinoda discusses anarthas, because he also mentions that Duradevam refers to anarthas. We all have anarthas to a greater or lesser degree. As long as anarthas are present, our relationship with Madan Mohan will not be strong, and we can't serve Govinda nicely, nor control Gopinath by our loving service. Therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur kindly warns us to be careful and avoid these four kinds of anarthas, which he describes. If one doesn't understand these anarthas, he is bound to make offenses to Krishna's name, to the Vaishnavas, to the Guru, and to Bhakti herself. So, we want to come out of this Duradevam condition, and in order to do that, we need some illumination or some insight to the different aspects of it. A lot of this is probably review for most devotees. But nevertheless, Bhaktivinoda is including this as part of his sequence of bhajan. He considers this to be most important because many of these subjects he touched on in Harinam Chintamani, and then when he wrote this book, which is a sequel to Harinam Chintamani, and the actual bhajan, his own heart's bhajan is contained here in Bhajan Rahasyam. Again, he repeated these same points because he felt these are so important and necessary for us to understand very deeply and to apply in our bhajan in order to purify our chanting of the holy name and come to the perfectional stage of Shudanam. So text 7. Anarthas or misfortune are of four kinds. This is described in Amnaya Sutra. Four categories of anarthas. Maya mugdasya jivasya gyeyo anarthas chaturvida vidvapalyam chaparado satrishna tatva vibramaha. Anarthas of living entities enchanted by Maya are of four kinds. The first is Sarup Brahm, illusion about one's real identity. Number two, Asat Trishna, hankering or thirst for that which is temporary. Three, Aparad, offenses. Four, weakness of the heart, Hridaya Dorabalyam. These four anarthas bind the living entity to the material world and entangle him in its miseries. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur is seeing the second verse of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Shikshastakam as representing these three aspects of devotional perfection: Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, and Anartha Nivritti. So therefore, in this prayer, Nam Namakari, these three points, these three levels of devotion must be there. So this word Dodevam especially refers to this Anartha Nivritti. And so therefore he develops this whole word into all these concepts of anarthas, so that we can, when we chant Dodevam, then it will open up all these concepts and all these ideas, and we'll enter into all these concepts and ideas and work at all these things. That's what he says. Because when he's telling the process of bhajan, he says, first we do bhajan according to the first shloka, Chaitodhavana Marjanam. And then when we developed all those qualities and all that purification, then we enter the second shloka. This is how. So that's why he spends 30, 40 verses, or however many verses on the second shloka, to give us the different doors that we have to pass through in our bhajan of the second shloka, the secrets of doing bhajan in the second shloka. So we have to enter into all the different concepts of the second shloka, the different words, the different meanings, and deeply through chanting of the Mahamantra and studying these shlokas and these purports. This is the path. This is the step by step path he's giving us. So it seems rather tedious, because this is the slow time. Until we actually come to asakti, then things go much faster. One acharya, he says that he called it the vast intermediate zone. He said the madhyamadikari is in the vast intermediate zone. It goes from madhyam kanishta, madhyam madhyam, madhyam uttam. So you jump off, or you go to the ocean and jump in the ocean, start swimming, and you can look back and see the shore, and you're swimming, and then after some time you look back, you can't see the shore anymore. If you go 2 or 3 miles, you can't see where you left, and you can't see where you're going either, because it's 3,000 miles to the other side, and at some point you're in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. So that's Madhyamadikari. It's like the vast, especially the beginning of Madhyam. You're in the middle of the ocean, you can't see where you jumped off from, and you can't see where you're going, but you just keep going like this. And hope is driving you forward, hope and belief and the idea that you're going in a straight line and not going around in circles. And so sometimes in that middle of the ocean time of one's spiritual life, there's so many crocodiles and sharks and timangila fish and waves and tidal waves and typhoons and cyclones and hurricanes, many things will come up there in the middle of the ocean. So it's a very dangerous time. But then when you cross over that, and then you start to see, oh, there's France or England or wherever you're swimming towards, then your progress goes very fast. So that's compared to like Ruchi. Even Ruchi, or you can say Asakti. Because then Krishna, you can feel Krishna very tightly at Asakti. So then, you know, all the sharks, everything are behind you. You can see them, but they can't catch you because you're attached to Krishna. So, this purport is there. The living entities seized by Maya and derailed from pure Dharma wander in this material existence, falsely thinking they are its enjoyers. I'll just skip down here a little bit. Surup Brahm. It means to be in Brahm. Brahm means illusion about one's own identity. The pure living entity is a tiny transcendental particle, Chit Anu. Means atomic particle of consciousness. And the eternal servant of Krishna. Just as a conditioned living entity experiences form, taste, smell, touch, and so on through his material senses, the pure living entity, the pure soul, experiences transcendental form, taste, and so forth through his transcendental senses, forgetting that I am an infinitesimal particle of spiritual consciousness, and Krishna's servant, the jiva becomes conditioned and wanders about in this material existence. The primary anartha of the living entity is his failure to realize his true sarup. So that's the primary, that's the business at hand, that's the primary problem. Actually, these verses, they kind of continue, because text 8 also describes this. He has what Bhaktivinoda Thakura does in this first verse 7, he mentions these four anarthas. Then in the subsequent verses, he gives further explanation of them. So I'm going to read each one fully by going up to text 8. So this is through Brahma. So we get full idea of this. So this is the first anartha we mentioned, right? So illusion about one's identity Sarup Brahma. But then he goes on to the next text and says Sarup Brahma, or sometimes it's called Tattva Brahma, is of four types. In other words, there's four kinds of wrong understanding. And I'll just read the English. The conditioned living entity is subject to four kinds of illusion or Brahma. Jiva Sarup Brahma, Paratattva Brahma, Sadhya Sadhana Tattva Brahma, and Bhajana Viroda Vishay Brahma. In order to perform devotional service, we must know these essential tattvas. So what we've mentioned so far about Sarup Brahma is Jiva Sarup Brahma. The jiva cannot realize his own transcendental form due to ignorance of it. He has forgotten his real sarup, that he is the servant of Krishna. Because he thinks himself to be the enjoyer, he's therefore confused about his true identity. So this is the first type of illusion. And the second one is Paratattva Brahma. It means to be an illusion about God, basically. Who is Paratattva, the absolute truth? Not knowing this, the living entity becomes illusioned. Sometimes he worships Shiva, Brahma, and sometimes another demigod or goddess. The inability to correctly ascertain the absolute truth is called Paratattva Brahma. Confusion about the absolute is very prevalent in India. Sadhya Sadhana Brahma. Now this is an extremely important Brahma or illusion which is widespread. According to the scriptures, Krishna prema is the only goal, sadhya, and bhakti the only practice, sadhana. The conditioned living entity, however, is unable to decide which is his goal among sense enjoyment, liberation, and Krishna prema, and which is his practice among karma, jnana, and bhakti. This is called sadhya, which is the goal of attainment, sadhana, the means or practice, brahma. Sadhya, sadhana, brahm. Brahm, it's not Brahma, it's Brahm. B-H-R-A-M-A. Illusion about the goal of spiritual life and the process to attain it. If one cannot ascertain the goal, in other words, set or define the goal, it is not possible to ascertain the practice. And without practice, it's not possible to attain the goal. In other words, if you're going to travel somewhere, first you have to establish where are you going. Oh, we're going traveling. I'm going traveling. Well, where are you going? I don't know. We're just trucking on down the road, so to speak. So no, I'm going to Paris. Okay, then that's very good. Well, how do you go to Paris? Well, then you find out that this you go north or whatever. There's a way to go to Paris. It's in a certain direction, it's in a certain location, and there's certain means and ways to go there. Fast or slow ways. You can walk there, or hitchhike there, or take a jet plane, or go by mystic airways, or telepathy, or whatever. Wherever you can go. So the same thing, this applies to bhakti, that if we don't know the goal, then we don't know what the practice is to attain that goal. So this is a little bit, actually quite a problem in our institution. Because oftentimes, if you interview or ask some different devotees within ISKCON, what is the sadhya? What is your sadhya, individual sadhya? And the person will be a little confused. They'll say, I don't know, we know, worship Nisringadev, you know, or worship Dhanachandra, or worship Nathji, or you know, any number of different pujas and worships. And what is the goal of Krishna consciousness? Well, the goal of Krishna consciousness is to be happy. And there are many, many things. This is very common. In Delhi often, I ask, when people come to my room, I say, so, you're in Krishna consciousness, what is the goal? And I get so many different answers. There should only be one answer for everyone. That the goal is Radha Krishna Prem Seva in Braja Gokula, in one of three rasas. And basically, you can say it's in Madhurya Ras. Become a maidservant of Srimati Radharani. That's the most clear goal that's presented before us, at least, that we're surrounded by this as our sadhya. All the acharyas that we come to know about, and all the books that we've ever read, and all the teachings we've ever been given to us by Srila Prabhupada and his predecessor acharyas are pointing us to the worship of Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari, and more particularly, the service of Srimati Radharani, which is called Radhadasyam. This is the basic general goal of all Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Everyone, if you go to Bengal, everybody has a deity of Radha and Krishna, or Gaurinitai, or if they have any deities besides Durga. And then you'll say, what is the name of your Thakurji? And what will they say? Radha Govinda. Everyone, Radha Govinda, because it's Rupa Goswami, the Rupa Nugas. He is the emperor of devotion. And the lord of the bhakti is Radha Govinda. And Prabhupada had his Radha Govinda. And also he established Radha Govinda in New York and Calcutta. They're like his sister cities. When Prabhupada was wandering in New York in dangerous areas, and the disciples warned him, Prabhupada, don't go there, the east side, the lower east side, there's muggers and thieves and robbers and murderers over there. It's very dangerous. And what was Prabhupada's reply? I am an old Calcutta boy. I'm an old Calcutta boy. I've wandered the streets of Calcutta since my youth. So he was, because he was seeing the harbor, New York is on the water there in Manhattan, Lower East Side is by the Hudson River and by the ocean, like the river there. So it's very much a port city, and Calcutta is very much a port city with boats and trade. And so Prabhupada felt right at home. Maybe if you're down by the boats in Calcutta, there's so many muggers and thieves down there also. So Prabhupada, he was teaching this. He was teaching Radha Kunja Bihari, Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. This is the Ishtadev that he worked for. This is the Ishtadev that he translated the Bhagavatam for. This is the Ishtadev that he sailed across the ocean for. This is the Ishtadev that he traveled 13 times around the world for. This is the Ishtadev that he initiated everyone in the mantra, Gopal mantra, Gopi Janavallava Swaha, Gopi Janavallavaya Swaha. This Gopi Janavallavaya Swaha is Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. But then as time rolled on, things, Evam parampara praktam imam rajashe uvidu sakalena mahada yoga nashta parantapa. Yoga nasht, the bhakti yoga becomes nasht, it becomes broken. And karma kanda comes in, and astrology comes in, and Ayurveda comes in, and gem therapy comes in, and stars, and this, and that, and, you know, Nisringa puja, and all kinds of things. And people, they can't, the old seniors can sort it all out and understand where they're going. But the new people, when new people come in, they have the Nisringa rings and the Nisringa pendants and the Nisringa t-shirts, and you say, what is your goal? Oh, I like Nisringadev. I worship Nisringadev. Acha? or Jagannath? You know, I worship Jagannath. Jagannath's my Ishtadev. Acha? So you go to the camp of Satyabhama and Rukmini and Dwarka. Jagannath is in Dwarka. And they say, no, I'm worshiping Jagannath as Brijendrananda Shamsundar. No, this is imitation. You cannot imitate Radharani. The mood of the Radha Bhava Gauranga seeing Jagannath is not the bhajan pot for the sadhaka. What Krishna, when Krishna's in Radha Bhava, in the mood of Vipravamba Bhava, taking darshan, he stood in such a way at the Garuda Stambha that he couldn't even see Balaram and Subhadra. He can only see the face of Brijendranandan. That was the vision of Mahaprabhu. So they're trying to be Mayavadi. Oh, I'm Mahaprabhu. I have my Jagannath. And if you want to even have that Bhava, then you should take Balaram Subhadra and put them out and only have Jagannath. And so all, this is called Brahm. This is called illusion. There's so much illusion about it. Who is the Ishtadev? What is the Sadhya? Your goal is Jagannath Prem? You want to go to Jagannath Loka? There is no such thing. There's no such thing. And what's in the heart of Mahaprabhu and what he's seeing, that is not accessible for us. We must follow the teachings of Mahaprabhu. There's two things. There's the word, there's the teachings, and then there's the actions. So what do we follow? Do we follow the actions or the teachings? Following the actions of an Ishvara, and this is told in Bhagavatam and by Shukadeva Goswami when he's talking about Krishna dancing with the gopis and the morality of it. We should follow the teachings, not the actions. Although generally the Acharya's actions, the Acharya means actions and teachings are the same. But if the Acharya does something that may be different or funny, we don't follow that. We don't imitate that. We follow whatever he says, whatever teachings he gives, which are consistent with Shastra, that we follow. That's called Anusharan. When you try to imitate the actions of the Acharya, or what to speak of, Avatar, that's called Anukaran. And that's against bhakti. Right? Mahaprabhu, I'm like Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu was seeing Jagannath as Brajendra Nanda and Krishna. You're not seeing. Are you fainting when you come and see your Jagannath? You're fainting on the ground and your breath stops and you can't, your wife comes up to you and puts a piece of cotton by your nose and she can't see any breath coming out of your nose? Then, okay, if you're like that, then maybe you can say. Otherwise, this is not imitation. Prabhupada said, Grihasthasya worship pancha tattva gornitai. Right? But no one wants gornitai, everyone wants Radha and Krishna. Okay, we'll worship Radha and Krishna. Jagannath is for preaching. Jagannath's for Rath Yatra and all this. Because Jagannath came, when Prabhupada started, he didn't start a movement of Jagannath. It's only for preaching. Isn't it? Prabhupada didn't go with any idea. Someone brought a Jagannath from the store, you know, and they said, oh, Jagannath's come. Okay, can you make a cart? First thing he said, he didn't say, this is our Ishtadev, we should do puja. He asked Shyamasundar and Malati, he said, can you carve a bigger one and we can put on a cart? And they put on a flatbed truck in 67 and had the first Rath Yatra. It was a great preaching strategy. But now when new people come in ISKCON, they see Jagannath, they see Nrisimhadev, and they see Ramachandra, and they don't even know. They say, what's Krishna consciousness? Well, I like Jagannath. You ask, well, I like Jagannath. And someone else in the temple says, I like Ram. Someone else says, I like Nrisimhadev. He's like fierce and merciful or whatever. And then somebody like, oh, you like Ram and Krishna? Oh, you're a Sahajiya. Someone says, oh, I like Radha and Krishna. Oh, what's this? This is not Krishna consciousness, this is Sahajiya. It's a real mix-up now. A real mix-up. It's really funny. Because when we joined, when Prabhupada was here, no one had any idea, and there wasn't any Nrisimhadev deities in ISKCON until after Prabhupada left, and they installed in Germany in 1982 or whatever it was. Prahlad Nrisimha, then later in Mayapur. But that, and those deities weren't to become the Ishtadev, they were meant to be the Dham, to protect the Dham, or protect the devotees. And Daityastan and Navadvip from the dacoits. But now it's like, you know, it's the Nrisimha, and people, other Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they make fun of us, you know, they say, what are these kind of guys are wild, you know. They have Nrisimha rings and necklaces and all this. So this is very applicable, the Sadhya Sadhana Brahm. What is the goal of Krishna consciousness, and then how to attain it? So each one should have this very clear in their mind, otherwise the progress will be very slow. It is only by the mercy of the Vaishnavas that one can obtain the fortune to understand that bhakti is the only auspicious sadhana, and prema is the only sadhya. If anyone has any doubts about Krishna consciousness, it's very clear, which we mentioned already. Open Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 4, and read the verses and the purports, and then you'll know what Prabhupada came to teach and what Gaudiya Vaishnava is all about. And see how many of those verses and purports talk about, you know, Nisringadev and Ramachandra, and then read Madhya Lila chapter 8. You read these two chapters and you have a very, very clear, well, at least you should have a very clear idea of what is Krishna consciousness. Madhya Lila chapter 8 and Adi Lila chapter 4. And you won't find anywhere about Ramchandra or about Varnashram Dharma or about astrology or anything. You'll find Braja Bhakti, Radha Bhakti, Radha Krishna Bhakti. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopi Jana Valava, right? So Prabhupada, he gave us the real thing, the right thing, and the correct thing, but then the nashta, you know, this Kali Yuga makes everything go upside down. Prema is of two kinds, Aishwarya Para, full of opulence, and Madhurya Para, full of sweetness. The Acharyas have determined that the topmost goal is sweet, loving service to Radha and Krishna under the guidance of the Braja Gopis. There you have it. We're talking about sadhya. Sadhya means goal, final point, what I am working for, what I am hoping to attain. The topmost goal is sweet, loving service to Radha and Krishna under the guidance of the Braja Gopis. Let's show. There's some note here also. So this is called Sadhya Tattva. The topmost seva to Radha and Krishna is known as Gopi Prem. Service in the mood of the Gopis, Gopi Bhav. If the Braja Gopis give their mercy, then we can enter Braj and serve Radha and Krishna in Gopi Bhav. To know the Sadhya, the goal, and sadhana tattva, we must first take shelter of Sanatana Goswami, whom Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and he later himself revealed these teachings in his Hari Bhakti Vilas and Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Then, after studying the teachings of Sanatana Goswami, one will gain deeper understanding of Krishna consciousness by studying Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila Chapter 8, Ramananda Samvad. Samvad means the complete talks of Ramananda. Following their teachings and the teachings of Rupa Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami, a sincere disciple can advance in bhakti bhajan, or sadhana bhakti, and attain the topmost goal, sadhya, which means to attain bhava, the mood and feeling of Rupa Manjari and Rati Manjari, and finally, at the last, to attain the service of Radha Krishna Yuga, following in the footsteps of the gopis and manjaris of Braj. So this is very wonderful that our Bhaktivedanta Book Trust has printed a very deluxe and complete edition of Brihad Bhagavatamrita for everyone to deeply study and understand, because Sanatana Goswami is a Sambandha Acharya. He helps us very clearly understand what is our Sambandha, what is our relationship with Krishna, and what is bhakti, and who is displaying the highest bhakti, and that highest bhakti is, of course, the Braja Gopis, which is the culminating point of Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And of course, Brihad Bhagavatamrita emphasizes the whole concept of mercy. It is by mercy of Guru and by mercy of Nam, in this case, mantra, Gopal mantra, that Gopal Kumar attained all his wonderful realizations, and the final sadhya, the final realization for him, was to realize his eternal loving relationship with Gopal and Sakyaras, and receive the loving embrace of the Lord, and they both fell on the ground crying and rolling in ecstasy, and it was a wonderful meeting with the Lord. So we can see this is the goal. This is Krishna consciousness being very clearly revealed and explained in the pages of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which Prabhupada extols in the purport of one book. I don't remember which purport, but he's explaining very early on in the Bhagavatam purport, Srila Prabhupada saying, if one wants to know what it means, what is devotion, what it means to be a devotee, and what is the goal of bhakti, then one must study Brihad Bhagavatamrita. This is written back in 1970. So we should take this instruction of Srila Prabhupada very tightly. And study Brihad Bhagavatamrita, because it is the foundation of the house of bhakti. You want to make a house of bhakti, so then the foundation must be very strong and solid. So this, all these discussions are under this category of Durdevam. This is one of the types of anarthas called this Sadhya Sadhana Tattva Brahm. And so I think we can stop there. Is there any questions? Excuse me? I didn't hear what you said. Not going. Yeah, it's Jiva Sarup Brahm, Paratattva Brahm. I'm still on the first one. There's four. The first thing is Sarup Brahm. And there's three others. But in Sarup Brahm, there's four categories. Jiva Sarup Brahm, right? Paratattva Brahm, Sadhya Sadhana Brahm. The fourth one is Bhajan Virodi Vishay Brahm. I'll do that right now, because it's short. Bhajan Virodi Vishay Brahm. This is what it's explained here. Doctrines other than Vaishnavism oppose bhajan and cause bewilderment. Virodi Brahm. This especially applies to impersonalism, Mayavad, which contaminates the heart and thus renders the living entity unable to discriminate. So, this is all that's told here, but what this Brahm is, or what this illusion, this fourth type of covering or illusion is, or it's a type of anartha, is that if we, as Mahaprabhu said, if we listen to Mayavadi philosophy, it can totally destroy our bhakti. So we must be very careful. Sometimes in the pursuit of education or academia, many devotees return to college and they study various doctrines and philosophies, and they can become very detrimental if they're not done very carefully under the guidance of well-wishing guardians, Shiksha Guru, Diksha Guru, etc. Because these philosophies are very, especially for a neophyte, even though he's in college or university trying to get a degree in religion or philosophy or Eastern studies, this can become illusioned and lose his devotion. So that's why it's in doctrines other than Vaishnavism oppose bhajan and cause bewilderment. So we should, especially this applies for devotees, strict devotees, they're only reading Vaishnava, Gaudiya Vaishnava literature, and they're cultivating pure bhakti in that way. So this is not so much of a problem. But if we expose ourselves to doctrines other than Vaishnavism, it can berode, it can uproot the bhakti lata. So tomorrow we can have more discussion of Durdevam. Any questions or more? Yes.
Maharaj, concerning the goal, it seems that in a lot of physical situations, the goal is to push on the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya, and that's encouraged as the topmost focus.
Sankirtan, book distribution, or Harinam is a form of sadhana bhakti. It's called Shravanam, Kirtanam, and Smaranam. Right? But that in itself is, we can't say that the goal of life is to forever distribute books. I've never found anywhere in Prabhupada's books where he just said that the goal of life is to forever distribute books. This comes under the category of seva. This is seva. This is particular actions or seva, which can, categorically, it should be in the category of shravanam, kirtanam, smaranam. But the actual sadhya, the goal, what is the goal of sadhana bhakti? The goal of sadhana bhakti is bhava bhakti. These are sadhanas. You're talking about sadhana. The goal of sadhana bhakti is bhava bhakti. And the goal of bhava bhakti is prema bhakti. And in prema bhakti, one realizes his own sroop and engages in a particular individual service for the pleasure of Radha and Krishna, and more specifically, the pleasure of Srimati Radharani, if that person has a sthayi bhava in Madhurya Ras. As a mandri, his goal, he may be eternally rendering a service of chamara, fanning Radharani in different circumstances, and Radha and Krishna with chamara, with a fan, and doing other services on the order, other services, making garlands, carrying love letters, enjoying keeping Krishna from Radharani and many, many things, you know, bathing, dressing. So many services are there and are mentioned in Pratana and Sankalpa Kalpajruma by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, Vilakku Simanjali. So the goal, this is the goal. This is the eternal final goal of the jiva, is to realize this sarup and to attain an individual particular service and any other number of services for the pleasure of Radharani and Krishna. And nowhere in any of those scriptures does it say to stand on the street corner and distribute books, or to stand on the street corner and beat the drum and chant Hare Krishna. I never saw anywhere by any acharya that these are some of the eternal services that one will do at the point of prema. So therefore, all of these activities that we're doing, they come under the category of guru seva, and they come under the category of guru bhakti and Krishna bhakti, because they're shravanam, they should be shravanam, kirtanam, and smaranam. But they themselves are not the param gati. They are the activities which constitute ISKCON as a preaching mission. We're preaching the glories of the holy name and hearing and chanting and distributing those glories through books and sound vibration. But the actual goal of Krishna consciousness is Krishna consciousness, is the Hare Krishna movement. We are all supposed to move. Hare Krishna movement means the movement toward, going towards or progressing towards Hare Krishna. Well, Hare Krishna is not a Jewish businessman from New York. You know, Harvey Kirchner. You know, some New York Jewish businessman. And the Hare Krishna movement means the movement towards Radha and Krishna. Hare is Radharani. So everything we're doing should be bringing us to the point of realizing our eternal relationship with Krishna and realizing and uncovering our eternal service to Radha and Krishna. So if Sankirtan, if the Guru feels that Sankirtan or book distribution of Harinam is the best thing for that, then he'll engage us that way. And if he thinks it's deity worship or it's writing or it's speaking or it's cooking or it's raising a family or whatever it is, then Guru will engage us that way. But I don't think any spiritual master would deny the point that the goal of Krishna consciousness is to attain Krishna prema and realize our eternal relationship with Krishna and realize our eternal sarup. So I think you're confusing the daily worldly actions of a preaching mission with the internal goal of each soul. So two things are going on. It's not the mission itself, which is in this world. Sometimes Prabhupada would say there's ISKCON in the spiritual world, but I think that's more of a romantic concept. ISKCON means the society of devotees, international society. Well, certainly there's a society, Vaishnava Raja Sabha. There's this, it's called GAN. Lalita Sakhi Gan, Vishaka Sakhi Gan. Gan means society or group of Sakhis and Manjaris, and they're all there. So we'll be in the Manjari Gan and Sakhi Gan of Kamala Manjari and Nayanamani Manjari and Prabhupada. And that's the type you can say is Sakhi society or Sakhi Gan. So that in that sense it's absolutely true. But there won't be 108 temples there and ISKCON New York in the spiritual world, right? So sometimes, I mean, the thing is that both the leaders sometimes create this kind of idea that this is our sarup, to stand on the street corner and distribute books or something, isn't it? Sometimes maybe is that what you're saying? This is the goal of ISKCON is a preaching mission, is to distribute Krishna consciousness, but then we have to ask, well, what is Krishna consciousness? And that's an individual, that has to be defined individually, and then we have to individually aspire to attain that level of consciousness, which we've been discussing. But to distribute Krishna consciousness, that's another goal. That's the goal of the mission in this world. But the goal of Krishna consciousness for each individual is to realize his eternal relationship with Krishna, and attain Krishna prema, and go to the spiritual world and eternally serve Radha and Krishna in your spiritual body. With a specific, you each soul have a specific individual service. It's very exciting. Everyone will have their specific service for Radharani's pleasure, and then they'll do so many other services. You may be making tambul, you may be offering chamara, you may be doing sringar, you may be making tilak, and so many different services you may be doing. You'll be especially trained in that service by the Sakis in Boma Vrindavan. Guru will reveal that. That's one of the 11 aspects of the Sarup, is your seva. Just like you're a pujari and you just do pujari work all the time. Day and night, cooking and outfits, and you're like a pujari machine, practically. Some pujaris, they make outfits, they design outfits, they cook, they artiks, they dress, they bathe, they do everything. But then the guru said, oh, now, you know, the temple has no money. So we're having all the grihastha wives do the puja, and you're a man, and you're a little bit strong and expert. Now you have to go out and collect money, otherwise there's no temple. So then he does that service. But, you know, his basic principal service is pujari, but all of a sudden now he's collecting money, or he's distributing books and during a marathon. So it's like that in the spiritual world also. You have your specific individual service, which you're very expert at, rendering pleasure to Radharani in that way. But then at any given moment, Radharani will say, oh, like you can see in Vishnu Chakravarti, I'm pulling on the ceiling fan. I'm pulling on there's a rope is made of vines, of lata, and it goes into the kunj, and it's connected to some banana leaves or some different kind of leaves, and they're fragrant, and it's fanning over Radha and Krishna's bed. And he's pulling this, the Nodvalari Mandri, he's pulling Vishnu Chakravarti, he's pulling, and he's looking through the kunj, and he's admiring the beauty of Radha and Krishna as they're resting. And he's pulling on the fan, and this fan, some banana leaf with so many flowers sewn into that banana leaf, and it's very fragrant when it goes back and forth. And then Rupa Mandri says, hey Saki, now you have to stop that fanning. Now go pick some flowers, because soon Radha and Krishna are going to wake up, and we have to have a garland, a fresh flower garland to offer to them. Oh, as soon as Rupa Mandri gives me that command, I will immediately leave that service and go take up this other service without the least bit of attachment. It was so blissful, darshan, seeing this beautiful transcendental movie of Radha and Krishna lying together and rendering service. And, hey, and then you get a tap on the shoulder, excuse me, Mandri, you have some service. Oh, do I have to? No, he doesn't say this. He says, I will enthusiastically, immediately carry out that order of Rupa Mandri and do whatever she asks me to do. Because she's like the temple commander. So you have to get used to temple commanders, you know. If you don't like the temple commander here telling you do this service, do that service, well, Rupa Mandri is a temple commander of Radharani's Kunja Seva. So she'll be giving command. Command means agya. And agya is one of the 11 symptoms of the Sarup, is agya. We have Guru Agya here also, the order of Guru. And there's Guru Saki Agya. And agya, they have a particular order, particular. So, Hare Krishna. Time is running. Okay, one quick, or after, or whatever. Go ahead. Yeah, ask me, everyone doesn't seem to be moving or too tired or something. Go ahead.
There are so many manjaris and so many gopis, so they are doing services, and I'm wondering how will we have our turn for us? Because we are not going to be right next to the manjari.
Well, it's just, that's the same, what you're saying is what the gopis were saying in Sharad Purnima, when they came for the rasa dance. They said, well, wait a minute, there's all these gopis, and there's only one Krishna. How am I going to get a chance to embrace him, and how am I going to get a chance to dance with him? And then Yogamaya made all arrangements. There was one Krishna, one gopi, one Krishna, one gopi. So exactly it's like that in the spiritual world. There's unlimited accommodation. There's millions and millions of mandris doing chamara seva, and because Krishna arranges for each, because there's so many guru vargs and so many groups of sakis together, and Rupa Mandri has so many people are serving Rupa Mandri. Then you have your guru varg and your guru sakis, but they all have their individual, you can say, Nitini Kunja arrangement to serve Radha and Krishna. And it's not like it's, yet you get a ticket at the donut shop or something, and you get the number 51, and you wait, oh, and then the bell rings, ding, oh, that's me, 51, okay, Mandri 51, and then, oh wow, where's my chamara? Oh, I don't know, I dropped it. What? Oh yeah, thank you. Oh, well, I have 1 minute. Okay, minutes up. Next. It's.
Are we not supposed to be always with our guru then?
That's what I'm saying. You're with your guru Saki, but each
level of, I mean.
Yeah, you're never lost. But I think she's making the point as well. There's only one Radha and Krishna. There's one Radha and Krishna, and there's these millions of mandris, and then more keep coming, more and more, and there's more preaching, and more people getting, you know, attaining perfection. So Krishna accommodates everything because the Padma Purana is telling him the Rasa dance are 2 billion gopis, 2 billion. But you see the description, Yogamaya. One gopi could only see Krishna. She could not even see the gopi. She was holding on hands of one gopi and she's seeing, but she couldn't even understand. Every gopi felt, I am alone with Krishna. So every Guru Varg, Sakhi Guru Varg, their Varg, their group of gopi, not that Prabhupada and Bhakti Santa, their whole group, that line, all those Sakhis together, coming from, you know, Nityananda's line, let's say, for example, Janamata, and that group, they'll all be together with Rupa Mandri and the Asta Mandris, or you can say that, 10 Mandris, and then Alita Nasa Sakhis and Radha and Krishna. And they don't know about this group, but, you know, it's all accommodated. And at the same time, there's the larger groups. It's like sometimes we have small meetings, sometimes we have these big festivals. So sometimes, All the different groups will be there. Gopal Guru's line, and Gadadhar's line, and Dvaita's line, Nityananda's line, they'll all be there. And it's all accommodated by Yogamaya. But in the intimate, when it's intimate service, then it's only Radha and Krishna and your own group, your own Guruvark is there. So it's very, very confidential and very, very intimate and sweet. It's not some football stadium and there's 80,000 mandris waiting in the seats and Radha and Krishna on the... But it's a little different because, you know, we all, Prabhupada was on the planet and we all felt, yes, we're all connected with Prabhupada, but when Prabhupada was on Australia, we couldn't really perceive that he was in front of us in LA. We would get the news, oh, he's in Australia. But it's a little different there because it's all right in front of, everyone's right in front of you. You're moving throughout the day and night with Radha and Krishna and your mandris and sakis, wherever they're going, you're there. No, you sleep from 2 o'clock to 3:30. Yeah, of course. Where does everything come from? Radha and Krishna take rest about 2 o'clock or so in the evening. Then the mandris, they stumble out on the side, they stumble on the veranda, they fall asleep in the veranda, or they go to different sevakunj, or they sleep outside their sakhi sevakunj for about an hour and a half. Then the mandris sleep the least, because the sakhis get up after the mandris. So it's about an hour and a half. So, don't worry. Vachanvatsyam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hmm.